Māori portraiture flourished at the turn of the 20th century. 100 years later, a new show looks at those idealised images with a fresh eye. At the heart of this show is a remarkable series of 8 portrait busts by sculptor Nelson Illingworth, a contemporary and sometime rival of painter Charles Goldie, commissioned in 1908 by the Dominion Museum in Wellington. Roger Blackley, who's senior lecturer in art history at Victoria University, has curated this new exhibition, and he showed me the Illingworth busts at the Adam Art Gallery. Roger, how did this idea come about? Was it something that came from the Goldie exhibition that interested you to go further into this period and this whole idea of Māori portraiture?
Well, it was interesting that Goldie's scrapbook did have letters from Nelson Illingworth, the sculptor, and I was fascinated that, you know, he actually had produced sculptures of several people who were models for Goldie. But also, it was a memory that I had from childhood of visiting the National Museum and that wonderful Māori hall. And at the door there was this sculpture that I realised, looking at it as a kid, was plaster because there were a few little chips missing and it was white underneath, this bronzy colour. But it was an amazing figure standing guard at the door, and frankly, you know, I just wondered about that far more than anything upstairs in the National Art Gallery. And since I've been in Wellington, I would occasionally go and visit them down in the Māori storeroom. You know, it was interesting that although they could be classified as Pākehā works of art, they were actually in the care of the Māori section and very much respected as portraits of important people. And I just conceived the idea of having another look at this whole moment, you know, a kind of ethnological turn in New Zealand art by bringing together sculptures, photographs and paintings. So we've got Pātara Te Tuhi by Goldie, we've got him in a photograph, and we've got the sculpture from Te Papa.
As a matter of interest, are they recognisably the same person, or has each, I mean, the photograph is one thing, but have, say, Goldie and Illingworth gone in different directions, you know, with put their own personality into it or interpreted it in their own style?
Well, I think that's inevitable, really. But, I mean, the case of Pātara is fascinating because Illingworth, well, he really did romanticise his project. So he claimed that he had found Pātara in the wilderness, and really, he was living in Māngere. And that, you know, he would never have allowed his aristocratic features to be depicted had it not been for a letter from a Māori MP. Actually, Pātara had been modelling for Goldie the previous 7 years. And there's photographs owned by the Illingworth descendants which show the original bust, which would have been clay. But I suspect also he did some life casting of Pātara because he wrote to his lover saying, I wonder how the old man will feel when the plaster goes on his face. So, I mean, I think he was registering his moko in that way. But back in Wellington, he then elaborated it. So, I mean, the interesting thing is he told a journalist, the features of Pātara Te Tuhi will not be reproduced exactly. The object of the sculptor is to perpetuate an ancient Māori type, and if Te Tuhi's features have departed at any point from the ancestral pattern, the sculptor will conform them in his model to the old ideal. And so it's this ideal that's interesting, because, I mean, who is qualified to judge such a deviation in any case? And then he told the journalist the most amazing thing, that he had found that Pātara's head conformed absolutely to the classic head of Julius Caesar, well known to sculptors as the model head for intellectual development. Now, the fact is, Pātara was an intellectual. You know, he had been the editor of a Kingitanga newspaper, had visited London, the British Museum, stayed at Lord Derby's country house. You know, he did conform in that sense, and so obviously this has inspired Illingworth to see this classical prototype.
Well, that brings up an issue. When we look at say, these busts in front of us or some of the photographs with a 21st century eye, we can feel a bit uncomfortable. You know, there's that question perhaps in the back of people's minds, you know, was it exploitation? Was this development of a type, you know, of a Māori ethnic type, patronising, you know, part of colonialism and in some ways wrong? And what you're saying is that many of these people many of the subjects for Ellingworth and Goldie perhaps even wanted to have their portraits taken. You know, it's just putting all that in context, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Ellingworth soon discovered that the elderly, you know, which was very much the type of portrait subject he wanted, were very reluctant. So pretty much the ones who he did depict were very interested in participating. So, I mean, I think they always saw themselves as participating in a portrait tradition.
It was like a Western portrait tradition, wasn't it? Because some of them had gone overseas and actually would have understood
portraiture was. It's interesting you talk about that discomfort, because, I mean, I think that discomfort has led to a kind of, not dismissal, but, you know, this tradition has really been sidelined. I mean, it couldn't really be accommodated by modernist art history. But with the passage of time, you know, their original anthropological agendas have shifted. And so ethnology now at the National Museum is called Mātauranga Māori. And, you know, within that, I mean, I think these serve as works of art. And I mean, I think you can see the models as participants in the production of them. And certainly in the Māori world, there has been a great deal of respect for, say, the works of Goldie. And, I mean, certainly if you're related to these busts. So I think from the Māori perspective, you know, they haven't been seen as exploitation, let's say. And, I mean, the conservative nature of the National Museum sometimes comes under attack. I think this is the really positive side here, because in Australia, Illingworth's very fragile plasters, these were supposed to be bronze, but were never transformed into bronze, so they are exceptionally fragile plaster, painted to look as if they're bronze. In Australia, they've lost them. I mean, there's a couple of remaining examples in the Art Gallery of New South Wales, but here in Wellington, all of the eight that Illingworth completed have survived intact, along with the bust of Augustus Hamilton, who was the kind of ethnological genius, or the commissioner, let's say, of the series.
And you have him here positioned right in the middle of the group, but do you think this is...
Well, it's not in the middle, it's sort of at the back.
Middle at the back, yeah, that's right.
And I mean, the nice thing is that, you know, he himself has become an ethnological exhibit. I mean, we should really have put him in a glass case.
You think this is the first time, potentially, that all of these have been seen together publicly?
I would say so, because Illingworth was a difficult, quite bohemian type, and I think Hamilton and he fell out, or at least Hamilton became quite unhappy about the series. So while there's evidence from the bases that several of them had felt applied to them, so they clearly were part of a display that would either have been the National Museum or possibly even the Parliamentary Library, where I know quite a few works were occasionally shown. I mean, these state collections did move around somewhat. But I think I would say this is the first time they've been exhibited as a group, and absolutely the first time that they have been in an art exhibition.
Who are some of the other people then who are in this group? We've talked specifically about one, or two, I guess. But who are some of the others that we know about?
Well, that elderly, stern-looking woman, she's Harata Te Kiore, who she was living in Whanganui when Illingworth went up there, and so Wikitoria Kepa is just behind her. She's from a very prominent Whanganui family. Wharekauri Tahana is that quite imposing one who was on display in the old National Museum. Tikiteri is from Te Arawa, and then this is Kahutea Te Huhu, the son of the paramount chief of Ngāti Tuwharetoa. He's an interesting one as well, because Illingworth declared that his head was exactly the measurements of Napoleon Bonaparte's. He said, "Mr. Huhu is not a specially large native, but he has the only head which Mr. Illingworth has ever met with which shows the abnormally large measurements of Napoleon Bonaparte's." And Illingworth told the journalist that he has a cast of Napoleon's head, and the measurement is identical. So, I mean, what we see here is that sort of way in which artists carry baggage with them, you know. So, in this case, it goes back to the phrenological notion that head formation was an index of character. So, you know, obviously, if this guy is a leader, you know, Napoleon is a leader, you know, and you could say this is not... That's a different kind of idealization from Hamilton's notion of ethnic types. I mean, that's another abstraction altogether. So the interesting thing about this is that tension between those idealizations and the realism of individual depiction. You know, because in the end, there are no ethnic types. I mean, there are individuals. And we know that, you know, within so-called races, there is as much variation of appearance as there are between races.
I get the sense of respect. I mean, when he's talking about Julius Caesar and Napoleon, at a time when that issue of the noble savage was being mooted, I find that really interesting that these are very strong leaders that he's comparing these two. That, and to me, as I say, that indicates a large degree of respect.
Well, I would say so also on the part of Augustus Hamilton, because he had been a prime mover in the 1901 Maori Antiquities Act to preserve the Maori material heritage. And his idea for these sculptures was placement within a proposed National Maori Museum. So it was to be a kind of pantheon. And he talked about how there should be a portrait gallery just near the entrance. So on the way in to see the large, you know, carvings and canoes and whatever within, you would actually encounter the people. He's emulating overseas practice. You know, the Smithsonian Institution in Washington was actively commissioning portraits of American Indians. But in the end, you know, with the passage of time, I mean, they're made in 1908... 2008, this is the centenary of their production, I think, you know, they very much have shed that old sort of museological rationale, and they now reveal themselves as fully-fledged works of art, and a very, very interesting period in our art that art historians have found... Well, on the main, have consigned to a side room. So, you know, we're hoping to return them to the prominence I feel they deserve.
As a matter of interest, perhaps the images from long ago that seem most disconcerting now are where Maori have been put into Western clothing and photographed. How does that relate to this period, which is like 1908? Do you know?
Well, we've got a photograph of Pātara. It's quite a famous photograph of him posing for a portrait by Goldie. It's a tea break, so it's quite a convivial exchange between the artist is actually sitting pensively, and Pātara's holding his cup of tea, and he's wearing a cloak. But you can see behind the artist the street clothes, you know, so he's taken off his jacket and waistcoat and hat. But interestingly, his trousers and boots are poking out beneath the cloak. So, I mean, he is, in a sense, you know, it's a... Goldie's doing Pātara and an old warrior. But, so obviously he's in a character, let's say. But as we know from, well, anyone who's seen Kapahaka knows that Māori themselves... And I mean, for all Pacific cultures have a dress for cultural purposes, as do Europeans, you know. I mean, Scottish dancing isn't done in your normal street gear. So, I mean, the way they're dressed here, I think, is how they would have thought it appropriate, you know, in a dogskin cloak or wearing a particularly important heitiki. This was how they wanted to be depicted.
Tell me about Illingworth himself. What kind of man was he, as we get to know him as an artist?
Illingworth, well, in Wellington, all the journalists said, you know, if only Mr. Illingworth would cut his hair, he could be a New Zealander. But, you know, he was a determined bohemian, and long hair was part of it. I think heavy drinking was part of it. A very, very messy love life was part of it. We've actually got this miraculous thing of letters he's writing to... His wife mainly is back in Sydney when he's over here, although she does come over. But the lover comes over as well. And these letters to his lover are very revealing of just the day-to-day life of what it's like going from Willis Street over to the museum. The museum was over near where the cathedral is now. Just the minutiae of it is just fantastic. You've got to give it to him, though. I mean, it was a major commission. It was £500 for 10 busts, so 8 of them are completed. So they're valued at £50 a pop, which, you know, is...
100 years ago. Yeah,
yeah, it is significant. And, you know, he trained, actually, in the Dalton Works, I think, back in England. So he's very familiar with casting. So, you know, this process of beginning in clay, and then the clay would be turned into a plaster. I mean, and then if the final step was to be made, they'd be cast in bronze. But, I mean, the difficulty is there is no bronze foundry in colonial New Zealand. So, you know, sculptors here really need to send their work back home. I think there was a conception on Hillingworth's part that there'd be a market, there'd be a really good international market for ethnographic sculpture, and Hamilton thought that they'd be able to get some really interesting exchanges. So there was correspondence with the National Museum in America, in Washington, the Smithsonian, was keen on them, but, you know, that required space, it required people to do it, and eventually, Illingworth's messy life caught up with him, and I think, you know, he escaped probably owing a bit and, you know, moved on from New Zealand.
But left us these.
Yeah, he also did a really remarkable monument to a Maori chief who had been quite a strong supporter of the museum over in Wairarapa, but it was destroyed in an earthquake in the 1940s. So the remnants of that bronze, it was a bronze relief. That monument, the relic of it, is in Te Papa, I believe.
Wellington's Adam Art Gallery is hosting Te Mata, the Ethnological Portrait, which is curated by Roger Blackley.